Why Football Happens, bringing you the immediate reaction to England's victory over Germany at Wembley at Euro 2020 in the round of 16. But there's a whole host of games to get into as well, because Monday the 28th of June may be the greatest night of tournament football in international football history, as France were knocked out by Switzerland on penalties in a 3-3 thriller, and Spain were able to get a 5-3 victory in extra time over Croatia. We had to break down those games and, of course, the big one from Wembley. Myself, Ollie Wilson, and Paul McDonald on the microphones. Football's coming home, I guess, right?
Much respect, England. Good performance. No, I'm serious, man. I've been a staunch defender of Harry Maguire for a long time, and I thought he was epitomised England's organisation and commitment today. And I think that Gareth Southgate's taking two options. He can play gung-ho football and he can expose his centre-backs, or he can provide them as much protection as possible and strike when the time is right in order to win matches. And he did it to perfection there. He really did. And then I'm a little bit worried now, because when it comes to game management, when we get around to talking about what happened yesterday and we talk about game management, that was a perfectly managed game of football by England. I don't think anybody could really deny that the final result was completely deserved. And I think we saw the true Germany today, in terms of this is perhaps the end of the cycle, certainly the end of Lowe's cycle, maybe the end of the cycle for four or five of that team as well. And I think that was reflected in their kind of sterile performance. But England didn't give them much. And fair enough, you can talk about Müller's chance at the end, you can talk about Werner's in the first half, but these are moments that every team faces in a big tournament, and England managed to ride out theirs, and they were well worth it in the end. What was your thoughts?
I mean, I've just decided that there are no teams that can defend in international football except for England and Italy, and I think I've said this to you guys privately on the WhatsApp group, and I've probably tried to mention it a number of times on this podcast, and today highlighted that when the squad's announced just over an hour before kickoff, you're looking at it and you're thinking, all right, so we've got four fullbacks, if you count Saka more as a fullback, wingback than a attacking wide man. You've then got Phillips and Rice in the heart of the pitch. You've got two solid centre-backs in Maguire and Stones. And I agree with you that those two in particular were just absolute rocks at the back today. And I didn't dislike it, because going gung-ho is almost naive, and we want to see England play expansive, expressive football, because everybody wants to watch that anyway. You don't want to be sat watching, you know, 10, 11 men behind the ball at all times. But you didn't feel like England played negatively today, but they also played to their strengths, which is, okay, well, you have to break us down. They weren't necessarily organised all the time at the back. There were still some iffy moments, for sure, but they're about as good at defending as anybody else in this tournament, and I can't see why more international teams don't look at that and say, well, if you can stop other teams scoring, it doesn't really matter if you're like Spain and you can go and score five. The other team doesn't score, it's fine. So I really respect this England performance. For Germany, I was a bit disappointed, because the best we've seen them play, we know they don't have a great defence. They sat a little deeper, I think, that back three today, which I thought was necessarily negative, but also what they needed to do to not get caught out by the pace of a Sterling or a Saka in behind. The best they've played in this tournament so far was against Portugal, when they went gung-ho. And you never got that feeling that they were going to go gung-ho in this game at all. It was apathetic from this Germany side, that we know when they have, you know, speedsters like a Gnabry on as well, along with a Havertz, that they can cause such problems in moving and shifting defenders left and right and stretching the defence. And I just don't think ever England looked like they were under that much pressure at all at the back. And I think part of it is because Germany played within themselves to some extent.
A few things on that, mate. I would say that we talk about chances being given away, right? Müller's chance is clearly gilt-edged, right? And all he's got to do is hit the target. Perkovic actually moved too far over to the left. But what you would say about that chance is, it's not came as a result of bad structural play by England. It was Sterling gets robbed in the halfway line, and the ball rolls into a position where, fair enough, you might say they shouldn't end up 2v2 there, but it wasn't as a result of bad defending or bad organisation. It was a result of a kind of freak loss of possession on the halfway line, which could happen anywhere in the pitch, and it just so happened that created that chance. So from that perspective, I agree. They were they were excellent. And one other thing I would say about England is, and the way that Southgate has approached this, England's record of winning knockout games in any competition stinks. England's record of against any what you would class as elite team in any tournament stinks. What Gareth Southgate has just done today is shake two humongous monkeys off their back with that performance. The things that have carried England around for decades have been removed from them in terms of having to carry the weight of that expectation and the weight of people being worried about what Germany will do or what other teams will do. Now there's a mark on the plus side of the column when you can say, yeah, they knocked out Germany at Euro 2020 in the last 16. And that's a significant mental shift for that team. Really significant. I know it's a different set of players, and I know it's none of these people were involved in the previous tournaments. Mm. But as a psychological mindset for the entire organisation and indeed the entire nation, getting that result over the line means the world to that England team. And I am more worried than ever, because I said to you guys in the chat last night, I said, after the shenanigans yesterday, game management, the one team that can game manage very well and have done so far in this tournament is England. And we're in the game management stage of tournament time now. This is where you get your undercrust as a coach to get games over the line. And Southgate's done it again. And yeah, I've criticised him and I've said in the crunch he might not pull it out against the truly best coaches. But the fact of the matter is he might not have to in this tournament. Mm-hmm. He might not have to with the way that the draws fell. And yeah, you might say that's fortunate, but it is what it is. And they're worthy winners today. And I would probably class them as favourites for the tournament now.
I mean, I don't see how, at least on that side of the draw, you can't see England going all the way to the final at this point, considering the opposition that potentially lies in front of them. And that's no disrespect to those other sides, but we said going into this tournament anyway that the squad for England this tournament is arguably second to France, maybe third to, well, I mean, some people would say Belgium at full strength as well. But I think defensively still, and I still come back to that, you build on foundations. It's what great football teams have done in the past, particularly in tournament football. I think there were some other positives when you're talking about the kind of mental side of this game, is that A, for England to go and get the second, for it to be Harry Kane, the manner in which they did it, they didn't lose their heads really, aside from that moment of madness. And as you say, it's a bit of a freak moment that falls to Thomas Müller that he should put away to make it one apiece. But aside from that, there was no erratic, wild behaviour from England, particularly in the middle of the park. And it comes down to the phrase you keep using, which is game management. And then to be opportunistic when Germany are stretched and pushing to try and get that equaliser, I think is really important to show that there is a calm composure now in this front line. The other thing for this game for me is reactionary conversations about players after 45 minutes of football. You know, people say Luke Shaw needs to come off in this second half early on. He didn't have a great first half. And I don't know how much criticism I would really necessarily lobby completely on Luke Shaw for the opening 45 minutes. Not his best. I wouldn't say it was dire by any stretch of the imagination. And he goes and creates one of the goals. He's an important figure in that second half and helped carry this side forward. Raheem Sterling, the number of messages and tweets that I saw of people saying, what is Sterling doing? Why is he trying too much? Well, at least he's trying something, because there are still at points in this England side when they're so static in that front line. Well, and you mentioned Maguire and Stones. They've had their critics as well. And those are four players that were absolutely essential to this game. And of course, Harry Kane as well finally gets off the mark.
If Saka and Sterling weren't creating anything, England weren't creating anything today. That was the 2 points. I mean, what I would say is there were times in that first half where Saka and Sterling were kind of dropping even deeper to collect the ball and trying to take it forward. But then they were also dropping off and England were going completely direct to Kane. And when the ball was dropping in, there was nobody to 25 yards of Kane. And I thought Kane got a bit of a hard time at half-time with regards to the touches he got, because what touches was he given? I mean, your movement can be better, but if you're not going to get the ball, then why bother wasting energy? And I felt like that a lot of times in the first half, where Kane was thinking to himself, why bother here? Because I'm not getting the ball in the spaces where I can do damage. And indeed, there was times at the end of the first half he was dropping 70 yards to collect it. But final synopsis on that game, I don't think that could have went any better for England.
Yeah.
I really don't, in every capacity. Maguire, obviously being unfit coming out of the tournament, an absolute colossus, remains one of the most underrated centre-backs in the world. It's quite embarrassing, people's opinions of him. Partisan opinions a lot of the time. His mistakes get highlighted a lot of the time because of the transfer fee attached to him. he was, for the last 6 months of that season for United, he did not put a foot wrong. And the fact that he didn't play in the Europa League final cost Man United that game, in my opinion. He was fantastic today. You've got Sterling continuing to confound opinion and justify his place in the team. Kane gets his goal. Saka gets his run out, which he deserves. Doesn't really do that much, but then you bring Grealish on, who creates the assist, which means that Southgate now has options again, and he can keep teams guessing. I mean, I don't really know what element of that game could have went better. I mean, if Gareth Southgate went to sleep last night, he would have dreamt of what exactly happened there.
Not only that, but Southgate has changed the formation and changed the system today, and it's worked perfectly in that sense. So even Southgate is able to answer, you know, the many critics that he has about his ability to tactically manage a game, and he went back to something that worked in that World Cup run 3 years ago, and it's paid off again against a big side in what is potentially England's biggest game of this tournament in terms of who they'll face, and you notice, in theory, going to the final.
You notice Foden, Bellingham, Sancho, when that first goal went in and Sterling tapped it in, they were all warming up on that side of the pitch, all ran over, gigantic team and squad embrace within the dugout, including the coaching staff, including Southgate himself. There's a real togetherness here, man, and like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it for any Scottish listeners. I'm really worried at this point that this England team have the capacity to go all the way. With the draw that they've got, with the team that they've got, with the way that they dealt out that defeat today, I don't really think... I think other teams might look at that and think to themselves, what have we got to fear? Sweden and Denmark, perhaps. But on the other hand, Germany have got better offensive weapons than both of those teams, and they didn't really look... Again, Müller, big chance missed aside. They really didn't really look like creating anything in open play. Once England were back and set in their low block, it really didn't look as if Havertz... I thought Havertz was Germany's best player by a mile, actually. But I don't think that they actually got into incisive areas where they looked like they were going to score. And that's good attacking players. So I think that could be a problem for both Sweden and Denmark, if indeed it is Sweden and Denmark in the next two matches.
Do you think Germany got it wrong? But okay, we'll move away from Wembley. Let's go back to last night's games. Well, two incredible games and a night that people are calling the greatest night of tournament, international tournament football, potentially, with the 5-3 for Spain against Croatia and that thrilling extra time finish. And then you can't cap it off. Oh, wait, you can, because Switzerland beat France on penalties after a 3-3 thriller. Can we start with the French? Because this is just, to me, it's so baffling that France showed for 35 minutes, how good they can be. And they looked like they had crushed the Swiss with that spell. When Pogba fires in that third, you sit back and everybody, I think, who was watching it on television goes, okay, game over, done. And you have to credit the Swiss for keeping their heads and going.
I agree, man. I just think it sounds as if somebody's going to chop up this recording of me for post-tournament, but game management, I cannot say it enough, game management. Does a Jose Mourinho team lose that game at 3-1 down? Like, not never. Like, I'm not suggesting that Jose Mourinho should be managing France or any of that nonsense, right? But if your team has got the level of quality that France has got and you're 3-1 up with 10 minutes to go, they should lose that game one out of a million. One of a million they should lose that game with the control of the match that they had. Ridiculous. And that level of capitulation is frankly embarrassing and unacceptable from all fronts. I can't really express it enough. And Pogba on the ball in that match was imperious, right? Doing things that we've not seen him do very often. And then I think Stephen wants to touch on that in a future pod about the time that he'll get to do that stuff in the Premier League versus the time he gets international football. But Pogba at that equaliser tries to beat four men in the middle of the pitch within the space of a doormat. When you're winning the game 3-2, like, sometimes somebody's got to have a shake and say, who's actually managing this team? Is Pogba playing for himself, or is he playing for that team? Because in that moment, he was 100% playing for himself because he wanted to put something on his showreel to beat four men in the middle of the pitch, and 5 seconds later, it's in the French net. Varane, Kimpembe, I can't stress how bad they were in the last 20 minutes of that game. Varane's supposed to be going for 100 million or whatever. The guy is clearly a good defender, and I hate to judge people on certain moments in big games, but he completely went to pieces at the end of that game when France needed somebody to step up. And I just can't fathom how Deschamps can keep his job. I can't fathom how there'll be anything else other than consternation from the French press at that capitulation. And it's one of those ones where, and I'd apply this to both games yesterday, mate, that I've listened to a couple of podcasts today where people were saying, well, yeah, the Swiss changed this and they did this in this moment and the Croats did this. Bullshit. Nonsense. Like, don't try and put a magnifying glass on certain tactical manoeuvres with 3 minutes to go in a game when both teams are winning by two goals. There's nothing tactical or strategic about what happened in those games. Philippe Auclair actually said on the Guardian podcast today they were emotional attacks rather than tactical attacks. That's what they were. These teams knew they had to score, so everything else goes out the window. I think that's what made for the occasion. But trying to apply tactics and logics to stuff like that, I mean, we'll never see a day like that again.
I mean, what Switzerland and Croatia did was just bullish fight back into a football game at the end of the day. And you admire, I think, what you say is the heart and the graft to get back into those games, because it would be so easy to mentally drop off, and you have to respect that. For me, when you look at the French performance yesterday, though, they've got it all horribly wrong from the outset. I know they've got defensive injuries, particularly at that left-back position, so Didier Deschamps tries to change something, but it was I really like Rafa Varane. And when when that first French lineup came out for their opening game against Germany, I looked at that starting 11 and said, Hugo Lloris is the liability in the starting 11, but Kimpembe is probably the weakest aspect of that whole side as the central defender alongside Varane. And that's nothing to discredit Kimpembe too much. I think he's a very adequate centre-back. I wouldn't turn him away from Hillsborough, let's put it that way. But for Varane to then have to try and support Lenglet and Kimpembe in a system that we haven't really seen the French utilise too much, and then you're asking a player like Rabiot, who has never played wing-back on that left side that I've ever seen. And if he has done, he's never played it very well because he's never really been asked to do it ever again. So from that point, you've got it completely wrong as a mess of players trying to fit square pegs into round circles. And you're relying just on the ability of Pogba and that front line of Griezmann, Benzema and Mbappe to get the job done, which in theory it should be able to. But if it can't, you've only got yourself to blame in how you set yourself up in that game last night.
A couple of things on that. I completely agree. Deschamps got his tactics wrong. I do think, as much as I loathe Rabiot as a football player, I think he was hung out to dry a little bit by getting shoved in at left back. I do think there's a wider conversation to be had on for another pod later in the tournament, maybe, about accumulation of injuries. We've spoken about this again, but what the French have went through, this is not a coincidence. This has clearly been, they've overextended themselves in the pre-season or pre-tournament fitness set up, because this just isn't normal. And finally, Kylian Mbappe is a disgrace. An absolute disgrace.
That is the golden boy of French football, mate. You've got to be careful with this.
I know. Well, if he's the golden boy of French football, they're in serious trouble for the next couple of years. Because that guy is putting himself first, ahead of his team, ahead of his teammates, ahead of his nation, everything. He has been clearly focusing on trying some weird warped way in his mind to try and emulate Neymar, an infinitely better footballer than him in every capacity of the game. Mbappe's all about pace and power. He's not about skill and manoeuvring in tight spaces, and he tries to do it all the time. I have never seen a supposed elite player have such a poor sense of decision making in the final third. There was a very good example. I think it just went either 1-1 or 2-1 to France, and it was Mbappe in the ball on the left, Griezmann and Benzema through the middle, and Coman came round and did an amazing overlap. The most obvious 2v1 situation you've ever seen in your life. Coman runs about 60 yards to get into that spot. Mbappe just doesn't pass him the ball. It's a 6-yard pass into his path. Coman's bearing down on the goal line, and all he's got to do is square it back to Griezmann or Benzema, and it's a goal. He either doesn't want to do it, which is probably worse, I would say, or he hasn't seen it. And then if you look back to the Germany game at the start of the tournament, as I mentioned on that pod, his runs off the ball, you're the quickest guy in world football. Slow down. Learn how to play the offside trap. I just don't get it. Listen, I'm not criticising the guy's skill set, but to me, if he doesn't get a move and try and reignite himself, he might have peaked already, and that should be a real concern.
Well, I'd definitely worry about that, and particularly the calibre of opposition he faces on a regular basis in French football, which allows him to make perhaps those sorts of mistakes and get away with them far more often. The last thing on the French game I'd say is, if they had won that night and gone through, the work that Karim Benzema and the player Karim Benzema has become from when he was hated by Madrid fans at times, and then Ronaldo came in and he was forced to shift wide, and actually what that forced Benzema to become in his vision, touch and control and his versatility of not just being an out-and-out forward and being somebody that can play all across that front line. And I think you saw that particularly when France were in their pomp last night against the Swiss. And I think he might be one of the most overlooked players in international football for his out-and-out quality in the final third.
I couldn't agree more. Couldn't have said it better myself, mate. In fact, one of the just the last thing on that game, it's a shame that that goal he scored is probably going to be hardly remembered because France went out. It was, if it had been most other forwards in this tournament, I would have said that that touch was fortunate, but not Benzema. He meant that all the way to bring it back into his path. A stunning goal, but a real shame that one and indeed Pogba's brilliant goal. Pogba was brilliant, by the way. I have to reiterate that again. I know I'm criticising him for that goal, but he was fantastic, and it's a shame that those two goals are going to ultimately count for nothing in the end of things.
Quick line on Spain to finish.
Yeah, I mean, extremely strange match that. You could be sitting here. Look, I feel as if I'm sitting here on some kind of branch alternate timelines where I could be talking about 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 different things based on what had happened in the last few minutes. Do you know what I mean? Unai Simon's save at the start of extra time, for example, when it's 3-3, you're talking about a completely different game at that point. But then you've got the Morata narrative that we've got right now. I was so pleased for Morata, so pleased with the stick that guy had received. Like, he's not, I don't think he's elite. He's certainly not an elite goal scorer, but that was an elite finish. Mm. Absolutely stunning goal. And I was really delighted that he put that away. I thought Enrique gave his side a bit too many problems by his changes. I think he made some strange changes towards the end of that game, where he tried to give some people minutes. I think I don't think Fabian Ruiz has played much, if at all, in this tournament, but he threw him on to see the game out, or at least give the guy minutes. But the exact opposite happened, that he put himself under real pressure. And I think he's brought on Pau Torres because clearly Eric Garcia has not played much football this season, so he looked a bit tired towards the end and he wanted to freshen it up. But that kind of unbalanced the team as well. But again, let's just not talk about this. Let's just talk about another astonishing game of football, which really could have went either way. Like, at any point, like, there's so many twists and turns in that game that could have shifted it in either team's favour. It was just great stuff, and it might not be game management is the way that I would put it, but it was certainly fun to watch.
I would definitely say, though, that Spain needs somebody to take control of games at key moments, because the fact that they allow Croatia back into that game is so late on is still almost as baffling, considering Croatia just went route one. You know, I've never been that hot on Rebic in his time in Serie A, and I wasn't that impressed by his performance during his part before he came off. But actually, the substitutions that Croatia made, not even fresh ideas, but just like, okay, we'll put some more weight in onto this side to lean onto Spain. And that's the way you beat this Spain side, because Luis Enrique is still trying to play tiki-taka, move it around. Beautiful football to watch when it comes off, but they are so fragile, I think, as a group of players in their physicality on the pitch. And Croatia just lent into that in the final few minutes, got themselves back level, but it was always going to be heartbreak. And that was one of those games where you saw mentally that Croatia side just dropped off completely once Spain once again regrasped things in extra time and started to move the ball around at will. And that was when the tired legs set in. That's when Spain will be dangerous. But I think against the better sides left in this tournament, you know, against an Italy or a Belgium, against potentially an England or even a Denmark, I think Spain could quite easily come undone. I don't see them as being in my list of favourites, particularly after this performance. Just kind of highlights my worries, I think, about them.
Yeah, I was surprised before today's games, the bookmakers made Spain the favourites at 7-2, which I was quite surprised at, considering the teams that they're going to have to beat on that side of the draw. But completely agree with everyone you said there. I can't really change much of that, mate. All I would say is I hope Luka Modric goes for another 18 months so we can get to see him at the World Cup in Qatar, because I kind of feel like he played in this tournament at times as if he knew it was going to be his last. I hope that's not the case. I hope we get another 2 years out of him, because in the last 10 minutes of that match, he played like a man possessed. It was insane. And they just don't make footballers like him very often, so we should try and extract as much value out of him as we possibly can.
Remember, you can stay up to date with all of the podcasts here at Why Football Happens by liking, subscribing, rating and reviewing the podcasts on anchor.fm, our host, and all good podcasting outlets as well. And stay up to date with us on Twitter, also at @podcast_WFH. That's @podcast_WFH. Until the next time on Why Football Happens, goodbye for now.